Okay, well, this week we are learning Shoftim Perek Tesvav, which is the next episode in the story of Shimshon. So last week we had learned, or last shiur, 2 weeks ago, we had learned that Shimshon had married a Plishti woman. He had challenged some Plishti men who had participated in his wedding celebration with a riddle. His wife pressured him to divulge to her the solution to the riddle, the answer to the riddle. She then shared it with those men. And Shimshon, in his anger, when he paid off the debt of clothing that he owed these individuals, he killed 30 other Plishti men to take their clothing with which to pay off this debt that he now owed. And in anger, he left his wife. His wife then was given to one of those Plishti friends. That's how we left off Perek Tesvav. We had said, explained that Shimshon was really using the Plishti wife as a means to find justification, excuses, if you will, to attack and to battle with the Plishtim on his own without involving Klal Yisrael in a battle against the Plishtim, because throughout Shimshon's period, we said that the Plishtim really were dominant over Bnei Yisrael. And therefore, this wasn't an opportunity for the Jews to clash with the Plishtim. It was Shimshon as an individual looking for excuses to start up with the Plishtim, and that was what he did with his Plishti wife in this particular episode. And now, Perek Tesvav, we now find that the Navi tells us by he miyamim. It was now a period of time later, after this episode with his wife, when he left his wife and his wife was given to one of his Plishti friends, and the Mitzudos suggests that the term vayhi miyamim means after a year, which leads Rav Yitzchak Sorotzkin to suggest, why is this episode introduced as having occurred a year later? Because we know in Chazal there is a notion that after the course of a year, a person starts to forget. We find this by Avelus Yud Beis Chodesh. After a year goes by, there is some form of, I guess, moving past the painful memories. We find it in other instances as well. For example, Chassam Sofer speaks of, by the reading of Parshas Zachar, Lo Tishkach, there's an issue to forget the story of Amalek. That's why we're makbid, he says, to read it every year, every 12 months. That's why some are makbid that when there's a leap year and there's 13 months from 1 year of Parshas Zachar to the next, some bedavka have kavana when they read Parshas Kisetze to be yod to the mitzvah of Parshas Zachar. So there should be 12 months that go by without remembering. So here also suggests Rav Yitzchak Sorotzkin, by Yihimi Yamim, which Mitzudos says means it was after a year had gone by, the memories had subsided, the tensions had subsided, and now Shimshon is ready for reconciliation. And that's why now the Pasuk tells us it was B'mei Ktzir Chitim, it was during the time of the harvest of the wheat, which means that the wheat stalks were fully grown, which is going to be significant, as we'll soon see. Vayifkod Shimshon es ishto, b'gdi izim. Shimshon acknowledges his wife with a gift of a goat, as he remembers her, so to speak, by sending her a goat. Vayomer, and he says to her father, Avoa el ishti, hechadra, allow me to go to my wife, into her room. V'lo nisano abiel avo, and her father says, absolutely not. No thanks, you're not welcome back. And Pasuk Beis, Vayomer Aviyah, her father says to him, Amor Amarti, after all I said to myself, Kisono Sinesa, you've obviously hated her, right? You walked out in a stormy rage, you left her, you abandoned her, and therefore, Vo'et Nana Lemereacha, I gave her to one of your friends. Okay, talk about Shver problems. This is a obviously tense kind of relationship here. So then her father says to Shimshon, Halo achosa haktana tova mimena. Her younger sister is better than she is. Tihina lucha tachta. Take her younger sister as the wife instead of her. I've given her away to somebody else. Let's forget that. Take her younger sister instead. Because this is how Shimshon's wife's father is reacting. You stormed out in a rage because she revealed your riddle to her friends. You left her. I gave her to somebody else. Forget that. Let's take her younger sister now as a wife instead. Okay, so once again, bearing in mind that Shimshon is seeking to use his plishti relationships as a pretext for antagonizing, for killing, for wreaking havoc with the plishtim. So here comes another pretext right here. And the pasuk now says, Shimshon responds in pasuk gimel, Vayomer lohem Shimshon. Shimshon says to them, Nikesi hapam iplishtim. I am cleansed, innocent of any guilt now with my interactions with the plishtim. Ki ose ani imam ra'a. Because now I'm going to punish them. I'm going to do harm to them. In other words, if this is how you're acting, I have no qualms now about reacting in kind. And the Malbim explains, he's saying as follows. He's saying, I married this woman publicly. No one objected to her father giving her to somebody else. So if that's the case, he says, I have nothing to worry about now when I take revenge or punish the plishti people as a result. Meaning he's going to hold them all liable for their not objecting to his wife's father taking his wife and giving her to somebody else. And as Rav Yitzchak Sirotzkin points out, the Rambam in Hilchos Melachim, and this might conjure up memories of the story of Hamor, Shechem, and Dinah, how the sons of Yaakov murdered the entire city of Shechem. Why? Who was guilty? It was only the individual who took Dinah and kidnapped her and held her against her will. Why did the Bnei Yaakov kill the entire city of Shechem? So one of the explanations is because they all should have insisted upon a system of justice and of upholding the Shev Mrs. Bnei Noach and punishing those perpetrators, or in that case, the perpetrator, who committed that crime. They didn't. They're liable as well. See, here too, Rambam writes in Hilchos Melachim, Perek Tes, that Bnei Noach are commanded to observe dinim. What does dinim mean? Dinim means you have to appoint judges, you have to appoint law enforcement in every region, in every city, to pass judgment upon those who are guilty of violating the Shev Mrs. Bnei Noach. So the same way the residents of Shechem turned a blind eye to what Shechem did by kidnapping Dinah, so to here as well, suggests Rabbi Sirotzkin, that's what's motivating Shimshon. The entire Plishti city, they're all guilty. They saw this man take my wife, his daughter, and just give her away to somebody else. Eshesish, Gilei Arayas, you can't do that. You're all guilty. You didn't step in, you didn't object, you didn't prevent this from happening, you're all guilty. And therefore now, what does Shimshon do? So in Pasuk Dalid, Pasuk says, Shimshon goes and takes 300 foxes, which Chazal, in Masechah Sota, view as being significant and symbolic, because a fox apparently retreats backwards. I didn't research the behavior of foxes, but the Gemara says that a fox retreats backwards. And therefore, he said, that is perhaps symbolic of the plishtim, who have reneged, moved back from their oath that Avimelech in last week's parsha made with Avram, that we'll have some sort of peace treaty between our descendants. And here we have the plishtim persecuting the Jews. You've backed away from your covenant, from your treaty with us. So I'm going to now punish you with foxes who also step backwards. And he takes these 300 foxes. He takes burning torches. He turns the tails of two foxes toward one another and puts a torch in between the tails of these two foxes such that each pair of foxes now is essentially with their tails forced to carry a burning, flaming torch. And then in Pasuk Hey, he lets them loose into these fields, which as we just saw before, this is the time of the harvest of wheat. So the fields are full of growing stalks, and he sets on fire The pasuk says in pasuk Hey, Migadish v'ad kama, they already harvested and perhaps tied together bales of grain and the standing grain and karam zayis, and as well as the vineyards or the olive groves. He sets this all on fire. So whether it was the grain that's still growing and attached to the ground, whether it's the grain that was already harvested and stacked and stacked together, whether it's the karam zayis, which is the olive groves, whether it's the vineyards and the olive groves, he sets it all on fire. All on fire. So massive monetary loss. And so in Pasuk Vav, the Plishtim are infuriated and they demand to know who's responsible for this. Vayomru, and they said, Shimshon Chasan HaTimni. It's Shimshon, the son-in-law of that man from Timnah. Notice they don't blame the Jews, they blame the individual, which is what Shimshon was trying to accomplish throughout his interaction with the Plishtim. They blame the individual. This is Shimshon, the son-in-law of that Timnah individual. And they explain why. Because this man took Shimshon's wife, gave her to his friend. So the Plishtim now in reaction turn around and they burn alive the wife of Shimshon and her father. They burn them to death. You burned our fields because of your father-in-law taking your wife and giving her away. Okay, so they burned the woman and her father to death. That was the Plishti reaction. And once again, Shimshon, looking for the pretext against the Plishtim, says in Pasuk Zayin, Im ta'asun kazos, ki im nikamti b'chem b'charechdol. This is what you do, then I will take revenge against you and then I'll stop. Now what is im ta'asun kazos, if this is what you do? If this is what you do. So the Malbim has an interesting explanation here, as does the Radak. The Radak says, for example, im tasun kazos, had you reacted angrily this way when they first gave my wife away to somebody else, okay, then that would mean that you actually stand up for some sort of morals here. But it's apparent, says Shimshon, that no, you didn't do this before, even though it's public knowledge. You don't really care about my wife being taken and given to somebody else. All of a sudden now that I'm making you pay for it, all of a sudden now you're all self-righteous and you're all up in arms about, oh, how could this travesty have occurred? Well, if that's the case, then you deserve to be punished as well. So according to Radak, the Im Ta'asun Kazos, had you done this earlier in reaction to them taking my wife, okay, that would have been understandable. But you didn't do this until now, so you don't really care. You care only about the fact that I'm trying to punish you now. Okay, so you deserve to be punished as well. That's how the Radak explains this phrase of Im Ta'asun Kazos. And the Malbim similarly says, it's apparent that you didn't burn her to death because you were so worried about or upset about her adultery. You're just trying to put me at ease. So Shimshon said, I had initially thought that I would monetarily punish you. But now that I see that you react by killing people as punishment, good. So I'll also kill people as punishment. And what does he do? And then in Pasuk Ches, he strikes them, physically speaking. Shok al yorech maka gedola. He deals them a significant blow, which Targum Yonasan says means whether it was the people on foot or the people on horseback, he struck them all down. How many specifically? The Pasuk doesn't specify, but he dealt them a physical blow and a significant one at that. And then Shimshon goes to Sif Sela Etam. Okay, so he now settles down. And it seems that for the moment, things are calm now and quiet. But now, all of a sudden, the Plishtim, of course, are enraged. Now they want to react. They want to take revenge. And so now in Pasuk Tes, they now make their move. What do? So Pasuk Tes, they now come en masse against Yehuda, where I guess Shimshon has now decided to settle down. And Pasuk says in Pasuk Tes, they camp out in Yehuda's territory. Vayinotshu ba'lechi. They spread out in this area known as Lechi. So in Pasuk Yud, the Jews, the Ish Yehuda, ask the Plishtim, why are you now coming up against us? What's been going on? Why are you suddenly attacking us? And the Plishtim respond, Le'esor es Shimshon alinu, lasos lo kasher asalanu. We're here to seize and imprison Shimshon to do to him what he did to us. Okay, so this is now a tit for tat, and the stakes are getting higher and higher. So first, Shimshon burns the crops. They kill Shimshon's wife and father-in-law. He now strikes a physical blow against many of them. They now are seeking to seize him and to take revenge against him. And in Pasuk Yud Aleph, an interesting back and forth unfolds. 3,000 men from Yehuda now ascend or descend to that area where Shimshon was living. Now, if they're sending 3,000 men, it's meant to be a show of force. They didn't send an emissary, you know, to plead with him, you know, please give yourself up. They're sending 3,000 men as if it's a show of force, as if they're trying to threaten him, it seems like, or intimidate him. So 3,000 men from Yehuda go to this place where Shimshon is living, and they say to Shimshon, Haloyodata kimoshlim banu plishtim. You know the plishtim have the upper hand over us. You know they are ruling over us, dominating us. Umazos asisalanu. What have you done to us? Okay, so they're blaming Shimshon now by implying that he's endangering them. As you're endangering us, they say to him. In other words, and this is an idea that's discussed by the Malbim, they're suggesting that he is a Rodef. You, Shimshon, you are essentially endangering us. You're being Rodef us by making us now a target of the Plishtim when they, to begin with, have the upper hand over us. You are a Rodef, you're endangering us. Now, if that's the case, we have the right, the implication is, to even kill you if necessary. Hence, perhaps, the show of force, 3,000 men. In other words, if they are suggesting that Mazos Asisalana, what have you done to us? You are endangering us, and you therefore have a din rodef. They're simply implying then that, you know, we could really kill you if that's what it comes down to. Maybe that's why they needed the show of force, the 3,000 men here. And so what does Shimshon respond? So he says, in Pasuk Yud Aleph again, Vayomer lahem, kasher asu li, ken asisi lahem. What they did to me, I did to them. In other words, this is not anything to do with you. I'm not endangering you. This is private, personal, between me and them. Now again, this is not me getting Klal Yisrael involved in a war against the Plishtim. This is me dealing with them. It's a personal business, not business, family matter. Family strife between me and them. Doesn't involve you. So he's arguing that I'm not a rodef. You have no reason nor halachic right to kill me. This is personal between me and them. So now, in Pasuk Yudbeis, Vayomru los, they say to him, Lesorcha yoradnu lesitcha biad plishtim. We're not here to kill you, Rashi points out. Rather, we're here to seize you, to hand you over to the Plishtim. That's all we want to do. Now that itself raises questions. If Goyim lay siege to a Jewish town or community, and they demand that the Jews hand over a Jew or else, are you allowed to hand over someone from the Jewish community to pacify the Goyim who are threatening to attack the entire community if you don't? So this is halacha. This is a din in Shulchan Aruch and Yerodea in Kuf Nun Zayin. And there, the Rama says that if non-Jews surround a Jewish group or community or town and demand, hand over one of you or else we'll kill you all. You're not allowed to hand over a sacrificial lamb, so to speak. If they specify, we want this individual, even then, the Rama says, there are some Rishonim who hold that you may not hand over even the individual they specify by name, unless he's Chayiv Misa. Unless he's Chayiv Misa. So the question now becomes, here the Plishtim are clearly threatening the Jews of Yehuda. They're demanding by name, hand over this man Shimshon. It was seen that the halacha, according to some, is you can only hand them over if he's liable for death. Is he liable? Is that really true? Is that really true? So the Taz writes, even if the individual being targeted is Chayiv Misa because he was Moreid B'Malchus, meaning even if he's not Chayiv Misa Midin Torah, he's only Chayiv Misa because he rebelled against the local ruling government, that's sufficient grounds to justify handing him over. So what the Anshe Yehuda here are suggesting to Shimshon, writes the Malbim and others, is that they're arguing you rebelled against the Plishtim. Notice, they're the ones who are ruling over us, right? That's what they emphasized. They are Moshlim Banu. Notice, you know that they are Moshlim Banu. They are the Malchus. They are the ones who are currently in control. And you obviously went against them. You rebelled against them. After all, you killed a bunch of them. So if they are Moshlim Banu, they are ruling over us. They are the Malchus. You are Moed B'Malchus. You now are, therefore, liable for death by the laws of the presiding ruling Malchus. Therefore, we are justified in handing you over. That seems to be the between the lines give and take here between the Anshe Yehuda and Shimshon. And Shimshon then, in Pasuk Beis, seems to accept that argument. Okay, hand me over. But he's worried, it seems. He says, V'yomalem Shimshon, Hishavuli pentifkeun biatem. Swear to me, however, that you will not attack me yourselves. Okay, so he's willing to go peacefully, it seems, but he's worried they might kill him themselves. He wants to ensure that they will not do so, and he therefore demands first, before he gives himself over, that they swear to that effect. Now, somewhat puzzling, who is Shimshon afraid of here? This is Shimshon who fearlessly takes on huge numbers of Plishti people, and yet he's worried about the Jews killing him, it seems. So in Sefer Klei Yakar, he writes that perhaps it's simply because Shimshon knows that his superhuman strength is only a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore only to be used against the enemies of God, but it won't help him against Klal Yisrael. And he writes, Pentifku bi atem, you. He knows you are the Am Hashem. So I have no koach against you, so I need you to guarantee my safety that you won't attack me. You are Jews, you are the Rabbim, he writes. I have koach against the enemies of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not against Klal Yisrael. Okay, so the Pasuk says they concede, and in Pasuk Yigimel, they say to him, Vayom Elohim or Lo, no, don't worry, Ki Asorna Asorcha, we're just going to seize you, arrest you, Unsanucha Biyadim, we'll give you over. V'hameis Lo Nemisecha, we won't kill you. And they do so, Vayasruhu, they tie him, Bishnayim Avosim Chadashim, with these two new ropes. Vayalum and Asal, they bring him up from where he had been sheltered. And Pasuk Yidalad, Huba Ad Lechi. So now he's tied. His arms are tied. He's approaching this area called Lechi, where the Plishtim had been camped out. We saw that previously in Pasuk Test, they were by Nachu Balechi. They're hanging out of Lechi. And as he's approached him, Plishtim, hey, rear the cross off. The Plishtim are yelling and celebrating as they are approaching him. They finally got their desired target. And once again, Vatitzlach Olav Ruch Hashem, God's spirit rests on Shimshon. Vatihyena Ha'avosim Ashal Zra'osav Kapishtim Asher Ba'aru Ba'esh. Those thick new ropes that had secured his arms are nothing more than like flax in fire. Vayimasu Asturav Me'al Yadav. This, due to his superhuman strength, they just kind of just melt off his hands. They melt off his arms. The ropes simply just they fall apart. And Pasuk Tesvav, Vayimtza, he suddenly discovers, he finds, L'chi Chamor Tria. He finds a moist jawbone of a donkey. L'chi Chamor Tria. He finds this jawbone of a donkey. It's apparently still moist. And Vayishlach Yado Vayikacheha. He stretches out his arm and takes it. Sefer Kli Yakor is puzzled. Just say, he finds it and he takes it. Why Vayishlach Yado? Why the emphasis on Vayishlach Yado? It's like making a very dramatic presentation of what happened here. Just say, Vayimtza L'chi Chamor Tria Vayikachel. He finds it, he takes it. Why Vayishlach Yado? There's something about that emphasis, Vayishlach Yado. He says, perhaps this was part of the nes, that it was all of a sudden, right next to him. He didn't have to go over to get it. Just put his hand down, it's right there. And it appeared out of nowhere almost. All you have to do is just put his hand down, and right there it is. That's what he suggests is perhaps the significance of this added phrase of Ayishlach Yado. And what does he do? So then in Pasuk Tezvav, we're told, Vayach ba elef ish. He kills 1,000 men with this one jawbone. Okay, so no sword, no bow and arrow, no spear, no shield, just a jawbone, and he's swinging left and right, and he kills 1,000 plishtim with this jawbone. Clearly miraculous. And here comes an interesting series of psukim. So the psukim now describe Shimshon's reaction to this miracle. What does he say? Pasuk Tes Zayin. Shimshon now says, "By Yomer Shimshon, bilachi hachamor, with the jawbone of the donkey, chamor chamorosayim. I made piles. I guess piles of bodies. Right, as they were piling up these corpses." With the jawbone of the donkey, I left piles. And then he repeats, "Bilachi achamor, hikesi elafish." With the jawbone of the donkey, I killed 1,000 men. Now, what's missing here? Seems like he's celebrating this miracle, and yet what is most noticeably absent is any mention of Hashem. There's no mention of Yeshua's Hashem. It's me and the donkey bone. That's all it is. Right? With the donkey bone, I've made piles and piles. With the donkey bone, I've killed 1,000 men. There's no mention of God here. And this might be why in Pasuk Yudches, immediately, Vayitzmamaot, he suddenly is very, very thirsty. I mean, he's been fighting, right? It's been a strenuous day for him. He's suddenly very, very thirsty, but it seems like dangerously so. Vayikra el Hashem, he calls out to God in Pasuk Yudches. Vayomar, and he says, Atana sata b'yad avdecha esat teshua gedol hazos. You gave me this tremendous salvation. Vata amus batzama, and now I'm going to die of thirst. He was that thirsty. Now I'm going to die of thirst. V'nafalti b'yad harelim, and I'll be taken by these uncircumcised. So all of a sudden now, he's acknowledging he needs God's help. So in Sefer Kli Yakor, he suggests that perhaps this is not coincidental, because he just finished speaking so proudly of his success, killing 1,000 plishtim, and perhaps there was some subtle sense of gaiva here, suggests the Kli Yakor. Hikesia elafish, I killed 1,000 men. Or his omission was he didn't mention Shem Hashem. Didn't mention Shem Hashem. Right, we know that when Malkut Tzedek Melech Shalom came out to greet Avram after the battle with the four kings. Baruch. He first praises Avram before he praises God, and he was held accountable for that. So here, Shimshon makes no mention of Kadosh Baruch Hu, says the Kli Yakar. And maybe that's why all of a sudden he became very, very thirsty. Knows to remind him, this is not all of your own doing. You need a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Make sure you call out to God. That's where the Teshuah Hashem is coming from. And that's what he does. He says that Tanasata b'yad avdecha esat Teshuah g'dolazos. When he becomes suddenly dangerously thirsty, he suddenly remembers, oh, I've got to call out and acknowledge that the Teshuah Hashem is Atah Nasata b'yad avdecha. You gave it to your servant. You, God, gave it to me, your servant. This Teshuah g'dola hazos. Because that's also an important mussar when we're zocha to miraculous Yeshuos in war. Never to forget, right? Tragically, the Yisrael B'tach B'tzahal, it's even hard to say it. That was perhaps a refrain after the Six-Day War when too many Jews forgot to acknowledge the Kadosh Baruch Hu's Yeshuos Hashem as they should have. So here also the same mussar. Never to forget and to acknowledge the miracles of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, not to take credit for oneself. And now look as well in that Pasuk Yud Zayin. It was right after he had said that I killed 1,000 men. Vayhi kichaloso ledaber. As soon as he finished speaking, vayashlech halachi miyado, he throws the jawbone down. Vayikra lamakom ahu ramas lachi. He calls that place the place of the castaway jawbone. And that's when he becomes very, very thirsty. As soon as he finishes speaking, he throws it down. And he then becomes exceedingly dangerously dry, parched, and thirsty. So Rav Yitzchak Sharatskin asks a very simple question, very puzzling. So he declares how he has killed 1,000 men with the jawbone of the donkey. Soon as he finishes speaking, he throws the jawbone down. And then he calls that location Ramas Lechi, the place of the castaway jawbone. That's a puzzling way to name that location. If you're going to name that location, what are you going to name it? You should name it, perhaps, the beating of the 1,000 men, the striking of the jawbone. He names the place after the castaway jawbone. But that's after the fact. That's a strange way to memorialize what happened here. If you want to memorialize what happened here, you speak about the victory. You speak about the decimation of 1,000 men. You think about you name it based on the using of the jawbone as a weapon of success in battle. You don't name it after the, here's where I cast away the jawbone. Why is that the name that he gave this place? Very interesting question. So he answers beautifully. He says, based on what we just explained, Shimshon was guilty and neglectful in speaking too much about himself in this declaration of victory, and that's why he became parched the moment later. Don't forget God. Don't forget God. You need to Kadosh Baruch Hu here. So perhaps as soon as he finished speaking, he throws the jawbone down. That was the beginning of him recognizing, oh, I just made a mistake. No, it's not me and the jawbone. Throw the jawbone away. This is not what it's about. It's about a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So he names the place Ramas Lechi. I threw the jawbone down to remind himself going forward, don't ever think again, it's the jawbone, the victory. No, throw away the jawbone. It's not what it's about. It's about a Kadosh Baruch Hu giving me the Yeshua. As he then acknowledges when he's parched and so thirsty, he calls out to Kadosh Baruch Hu, I need your help. Don't allow this success to now go down in defeat. And then once he acknowledges the role that Kadosh Baruch Hu played here in giving him this victory, so then he zocha once again to another nes. And Pasuk Yates, God breaks open that machtesh asher balachi, which some Rishonim Rashi explains means the indentation in the jawbone where the teeth would sit. Suddenly there's like an opening there, and water flows out of the jawbone. He drinks the water. His spirit is restored. He survives. He lives again. He now calls that Ein HaKore, the spring that came as a result of the one who called out to God, Asher Balachi, that is in the Lechi, or that was perhaps in the place called Lechi, Ad HaYamazeh, until this very day, that is what that place is called. The place Lechi has a spring that came about as a result of one who called out to God. And then the Perek Tezvav concludes with Shimshon judging Klal Yisrael, Bimei Plishtim, once again, during the rule of Plishtim, during the reign of the Plishtim, for 20 years. The Plishtim are still in domination of Klal Yisrael, but Shimshon is the Shopet, and he's the one who is, from time to time, stirring up trouble, keeping the Plishtim in check, and killing some here, killing some there, etc. And once again, the Malbim concludes by saying that he named this the spring of one who calls out to God, so that people should always remember that when people call out sincerely to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Be'ez Tzara, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds with miracles. And you have to make a bracha when you see such a place where a miracle occurred to remind yourself of the miracle, that one should always call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Be'ez Tzara, to be zocha to Yeshua's Hashem. Okay, we'll conclude here.